With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome to State of the Nation on today's News Talk with Brian McClain and Timothy Shea. We are live from Texas in New York. You can visit us on the web at tntradio.live. Brian, welcome to State of the Nation.
Hey, great to see you, and thanks for being here, Timothy.
You know, we talk a lot on the show about predictive programming, and even though it might seem old, it keeps happening over and over and over again. Just a few years ago, Joaquin Phoenix had a movie entitled Her about a guy who develops this quote unquote relationship with a program, a computer program. And now, Brian, experts are predicting a $1 billion with a B dollar market for AI girlfriends. They're reporting that men are spending $10,000 a month on fake relationships. I think I need to get into the AI business, Brian.
Yeah, maybe. You know, that's cheaper than courting some women, though. So one of the people spending that much might point that out to us. We've also talked a little bit about the general decrepitude of society, and that makes it very difficult for young people to connect in ways that they used to. And that just seems to be the way that it is. And you're right to bring up the movie Her. We've been talking about this topic on Boiler Room for the entire length of the program, probably going on its 10th year now. And we saw this early on. It started with pillows, Timothy. It started with some of those anime waifu pillows, you know, and here we are now. We're talking, robots, AI, synthetics, and you don't even want to look into. I recommend you do not do a web search on the sort of things that you can connect physically to these sort of software and online experiences, because it's kind of creepy.
It's more than kind of creepy. The Internet of Things has become the Internet of Things. And I see something more insidious going on here, Brian. I see this as all part of a whole. And I know, you know, we talk about things that are really happening and we end up sounding like Charlie on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with post-it notes and threads connecting them. And we had high fructose corn syrup in the 70s. They introduced soy into processed foods in the 80s. I don't think it's any coincidence as a biologist that men's sperm counts now, men under 40 have one third the sperm count that men of my generation had when we were under 40. And you add to that all the social stigma against men. Incels, we never used to call guys incels. They were, you know, a little bit nerdy or geeky or whatever, but we never called them incels, involuntary celibates. We never labeled them as unworthy to reproduce like we have in the last 10 years. And on and on and on, to the point where you've got these morbidly obese, incredibly unattractive women with standards that are ridiculous. They want a minimum of 6'5". They want a minimum of 200K income. They want, you know, it's one thing after another. Is this an attack on humanity? Is this just part of an overall attack on our ability to reproduce the species?
Yes, it absolutely is. And when you zoom out far enough, you see the overarching umbrella, and the overarching umbrella is that of transhumanism, which is, it's inherent and intrinsic in globalism and in, you know, societal change. So that really is where this all heads. Another great predictive programming movie that really shows the breadth and depth of where this all heads is one with Robin Wright in it from 2014 called The Congress. Highly recommend if you want to see the end state of all this.
Excellent movie. And right out of Brave New World, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, they're now reporting development of an artificial womb that an artificially inseminated zygote can be implanted and grow into a baby. It's scary what's going on out there in real life.
Yeah, just watched Alien the other night too. I think I mentioned that last week.
Yep.
When I see artificial wombs, I think about Alien 3. I think about The Matrix. Just, yeah, all that fun sci-fi stuff.
You know what the biggest problem is, Brian? It's us. It's people that continue to do stupid things. I always maintained that 97.3% of people were functional morons, and COVID proved that I was a cockeyed optimist. And it's because of people like French actress Audrey Lemay, who refused to press charges after her home in the south of France was burgled. But then she found out that the burglars were illegal aliens, and so she declined to press charges. And those burglars were acquitted at trial, two of them, and they were responsible for a string of burglaries in the south of France. This two-tier justice system where people are virtue signaling the criminals, right? Because that's what they are. If you or I had broken into her house, we'd be in a French prison today. This is the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. This whole, virtue signal ourselves to death, virtue signal ourselves to poverty, virtue signal ourselves right out of any sort of freedom and liberty. Not a good plan, if you ask many Americans.
It's just like Walt Kelly's Pogo. We have met the enemy, and he is us.
That's right.
At TNT, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on today's News Talk, TNT.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Rejoining State of the Nation is GOP political strategist and insider, our good friend, host of the Grassroots Truthcast podcast, the ever effervescent Gene Valentino. Check out
Hey
his
guys.
website, genevalentino.com, and his podcast, Grassroots, at Spotify, Apple, all the great podcast platforms. Welcome back, Gene.
Hey, thank you, Timothy. Hey guys, did I hear you say you can do some predictive creating of the girlfriend you want through this AI stuff?
Sure.
You can
Well,
program it right down to the jot and tittle.
Well, if I dare try to do that, my wife will be sending me to a proctologist to get my head examined. And I probably end up staying
Either
there overnight too.
yeah, I bet.
that or you'll both have to jointly visit a proctologist
Exactly. Oh God, that was a good segment. I can see the AI can take us into some regions we probably have never delved into before, and that probably is the distinguishing situation for our generation of people, a whole new world of technology and science imposing on us a culture and a way of life we're not predicting right now. Maybe that's part of the stuff that sends us crazy sometimes when we talk politics.
Well,
Paradigm
what was the
shift.
original?
Yeah, what was the original Star Trek intro? To boldly go where no man has gone before. So we've gone down a rabbit hole now in America. Our justice system is thoroughly corrupt. The prosecutors are corrupt. Many DAs and even attorney generals basically appointed by George Soros with all of his money. And now we've got the corrupt Judge Juan Merchan in New York, who's not going to allow Donald Trump go to his son's high school graduation. What kind of power trip is this moron on?
Boy, you this was what I was hoping you'd be asking for today. This is a silly event. This is just one issue. First of all, it's disgusting, and it's unfair to Donald Trump when he's allowing Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels to talk freely on this case without any handcuffs on their mouth, and they're the ones. That you got a porn star here who has a case had a case lodged against Donald Trump, and the court the judge ordered her to pay $420,000 in Trump's legal fees. And then you've got Michael Avenatti who was now a convicted felon, behind bars providing commentary from his jail cell. And in parallel to that, talk about how crazy things are. You've got a Congress that has asked Joe Biden to come in and give some testimony, and Biden refuses. But yeah, the judge mandates that Trump be around 4 to 6 days a week for the court, for in the courtroom, denying him not only the right to go visit, go to his son's graduation, but any of his campaign activity between now and November. I'll tell you what it does. I think the people are finally waking up. I think it does nothing but increases poll ratings. And I think it just fattens his campaign war chest. And I hope it happens that way. If we step back and take a look at what's happened, I just feel something more, something less obvious, but more pervasive is occurring. I don't believe Biden alone is smart enough to do it.
No.
I do believe he's got his cabal around him that is doing it. Doing what? Causing a circus of activity and strategizing with Letitia James, this judge, Alvin Bragg, and the rest of them, and tying Trump up in court for one reason, so that he doesn't have to debate Biden. Remember, these people around Biden are trying to protect him. They're trying to prevent the National Elections Commission and the 12 debates they'd like to see between now and Election Day get scheduled and do actually some of these debates earlier than later because of all this early election stuff still in certain areas of the country. Well, if we tie Trump up in court, he can't debate Biden, whether he wants to debate Biden or Biden wants to debate him or not. Biden very cleverly took himself out of the hot seat by getting the court prosecutors and the Justice Department to go after Trump in an illegal election tampering scheme that if that's what happens, then they've succeeded on that. But I think, guys, they fail ultimately because the American people, the grassroots of our nation, is about we, not about them. And all of the we, the people folks we've been talking about are going to step up and step out and get into that voting booth and do what they've got to do. I regret we have to wait to November. Maybe that's a change we can talk about in the future. But today we're waiting till November unless something radical changes.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people are talking about this being a form of election interference. And I think that, you know, you're kind of hinting at that here or saying, you know, yeah, you're in that camp on the in this, you know, situation. But they just can't put Biden on a debate stage. Like, I mean, no matter what, that's not going to fly. I mean, the guy can't even go to a, you know, a staged dinner or get on his, you know, one of his Air Force One jets or Marine One without just falling down or a gaffe or anything. So, I mean, yeah, do you think this is a good strategy for them? Because, you know, I keep going back to the, you know, the Obi-Wan Kenobi factor when it comes to every time they, you know, say they're going to lop his head off. It's almost like, you know, Jason Burmis, one of our colleagues here, he does the show after us yesterday. He said he thinks they're going to actually put him in jail. And I'm kind of trying to see that far down the line, too, to see like ultimately what the goal is, because I've been feeling like ultimately the goal may be to put him back in, allow him to win, not rig the election in ways that they did last time, and then have a terrible geopolitical situation for him to deal with or a financial one.
Yeah, putting the inconsistencies of how our allies look at us overseas and the lack of trust and confidence they're now in having in us. Think about what it does if Biden got in locally. I just pulled a piece of paper up. This is called the Biden Economics, okay? There's two columns in it. And I'll just read it in case you can't see it. Every January 2020 to January 2024, orange juice, coffee, wheat, white bread, eggs, chicken, ground beef, rice, iceberg lettuce, potatoes, milk, butter, bananas, Cheerios, and cream of mushroom soup. I'm looking at all of the increases in prices on these items. 43%, 60%, 100%, 50%, 33%. They're all over 45% on average. Almost double in some cases. Is that what we want for another 4 years?
Well, a lot of people, you know, if you believe them, these people are either stupid or they're liars, because they just think that Joe's the best president ever. And isn't it great that we're so well respected on the international stage again? And the gaslighting is unbelievable. But getting back to Judge Marchand, we've only got about a minute left. Did you see what he did today? He allowed a juror who has been posting a lot of anti-Trump videos to stay on the jury. It's unbelievable. They're not even making a pretense, Gene, of having a fair and impartial jury.
Yeah, I could only imagine how bad the others were that they discarded. But the truth of the matter is they only picked six today. They have more than double to go. And it's turned out to be a two-tiered system of justice that is right under your nose. Biden will not address the House Ethics Committee and other agencies of the Congress that have called him in to testify. Yet this judge wants him in the courtroom 4 to 6 days a week. What an inconsistent two-tiered system of justice. I just don't understand.
Peter Navarro is in prison for doing exactly what Joe Biden and Hunter Biden are doing. You're 100% correct. And who's the biggest loser in this whole graduation contretemps? Unfortunately, it's Barron, an 18-year-old kid that would love to have his father at his high school graduation. Gene, one thing that's not two-tier is your appearances here on State of the Nation. You always bring your A-game. We can't wait to see you again.
See you again soon. Thanks, gentlemen.
You're watching State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Limbit Open.
Money is a problem for you. Does that make you into a communist?
Not at all. Not at all. It's just the way that money is brought into circulation. You know, most people don't understand that concept. We live in a debt-based fiat economy. And the way that money is brought into circulation is basically out of thin air. You know, you go to the bank, you ask for a loan, a mortgage or something. The bank doesn't hold those funds within their vaults, whatever you want to call it. And then they literally press a button and that money gets brought into circulation through thin air through the Bank of England and given to that person. And then that person has to pay that money back with interest on top. So that whole concept of the way money is brought into circulation, it is a form of control.
Limbit Open. And today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Whatever happened to good? It's a word that gets thrown around a lot, and it's become our automatic answer to so much.
Hey, how's things?
Good.
Your mom, your weekend?
Good, good. Is good even that good anymore? At the Selbos, we believe good deserves better. Let's reclaim its true meaning. To us, good has always been about making a difference, and good never picks or chooses who it helps. Isn't it time we all remember what good really means?
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Nogales, Arizona rancher George Allen Kelly is on trial for the murder of an illegal alien found dead on his property. But the lead forensic consultant for the defense team in this case says that the detectives and deputies who worked on this case are the worst, most incompetent, and biased he has ever experienced in over 45 years of law enforcement and forensic experience. Dr. Ron Martinelli is that lead forensic consultant. He's a nationally renowned forensic criminologist, law enforcement expert, and certified medical examiner, and he joins us now. Dr. Martinelli, thank you so much for joining us on State of the Nation. Timothy and I have been looking at this case since it happened, and I gotta say, you sent us some video this morning, and I was really blown away when I watched some of the things that the sheriff in the county had to say. But maybe start us at the beginning for anyone who may not be familiar with this case. What are we dealing with?
Yeah, no problem. Let me correct you, though. I'm not a medical examiner. I'm a certified medical investigator. So I'm a PhD, not an MD. But okay. I deal with hundreds of shootings, hundreds of homicides, and force mechanisms of injury I'm qualified in federal and state court to talk about. So we have our own medical team here, including a forensic pathologist that deals with gunshot wounds, and I'm apprenticed under him. But let's go back to the beginning of this thing. Back in January 30th of last year, Mr. Kelly, his name is George Allen Kelly, but he goes by Allen. Allen and Wanda Kelly live on a beautiful 180-acre ranch, literally on the border, just outside of Nogales, Mexico, which is in Santa Cruz County. Santa Cruz County is the smallest and most impoverished county in Arizona. It's patrolled by the sheriff's office, Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office, which is a very small department, just, you know, maybe 20 patrol deputies. They have their own jail, a lot of correctional staff there, and then a sheriff. They have a CID, which is a criminal investigations division. And this case was investigated by their CID, of which basically you've got about four detectives there. And but going back to the ranch, because I think it's important people understand the history of border ranches, especially Mr. Kelly's ranch. He and his wife, Wanda, moved from Montana to the Nogales area in 2003. About 2013, they bought this 180-acre ranch just a mile and a quarter from the border. So literally from their living room window, you can look outside and you can see the Trump wall and the Biden wall. And it's mostly mesquite trees and washes, and it's actually a very beautiful area, but it's desolate and it's isolated, and that's the way the Kellys like it. So they're in their 70s, so they're well beyond retirement age. Mr. Kelly, just kind of like me, he's got like really bad knees and a bad back. He walks very slow and determinately. They have livestock on the ranch, and and this is all from Allen Kelly, and I've been out to the ranch many times, so I'm very fluent with what the ranch looks like and the environment. Mr. Kelly said that right the day after President Biden was sworn into office, they saw an immediate turn of events as to people trespassing on their property. Now, the type of people that have historically trespassed on their property is really important to understand. So going back from 2013, when they first got the ranch, they were seeing, you know, migrants, illegal migrants, we call them UDAs, undocumented aliens, sneaking across the border in pairs or families, no problems. The Kellys felt bad about these people because it's desolate. They run out of water, they run out of food, and they would provide them with water and give them directions on getting into the town of Nogales, which is several miles away. That all changed the day after Biden took office. They started seeing armed drug smugglers carrying large backpacks and AK-47 weapons, and they found human traffickers coming across their land, cutting their wires and coming across their land. And with huge backpacks, which they assumed were drugs, marijuana, things like that. But the key thing here was that they were armed. Mr. Kelly was fired upon prior to this incident on two separate occasions. So on one occasion, a couple of years ago, when he was walking his dogs, and all he carried with him was a pistol, just for predators and, you know, rattlesnakes, he was fired upon by armed drug smugglers. And he took cover. He took no other action except getting down low on the ground with his dogs. A few months before this incident, on the 30th, he was with his dogs. Now he had a rifle with him, and he bought his own AK-47. And he's a very good marksman, having been up in Montana, owned a hunting and fishing lodge, and being a guide. So he certainly knows weaponry and how to shoot a rifle. And on this occasion, he was fired upon again by armed, what he believed to be armed drug smugglers, cartel people. And this time, he fired his weapon several times up into the air to scare them away. And what's important to know about this, Brian, is that Alan Kelly never took on the cartel. And he said, hey, look, I'm not a stupid man. I'm not getting into any gunfight with armed cartel members that could come back here in this isolated area and could slaughter my wife and I and kill all our livestock and burn our house to the ground anytime they wanted to. I fired well up into the air and away from them to scare them away. And that's exactly what happened on that occasion. Fast forward to January.
Dr. Martinelli, Dr. Martinelli, can I pause you right there? So he fired the warning shot on this second occasion. We got a headline we're going to take, and when we come back, we'll pick up right there. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Check this out.
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Following Iran's missile and drone attack on Israel, Israel's war cabinet has resolved to take clear and decisive action, although any response will adhere to guidelines set by the United States. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has called for the Western nations to extend support to Ukraine in this conflict with Russia, comparable to the assistance provided to Israel during recent Iranian airstrikes. Jury selection has commenced in the criminal trial of former U.S. President Donald Trump.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, Ron, so you're getting us spun up on this story here, and pick up where you left off right after the warning shots.
Sure. So, and that was successful in scaring the drug smugglers away. Moving forward to the 30th of January of last year, Mr. Kelly was inside his house with his wife. He was preparing lunch, and his wife was looking out the eastern window. So the living room faces both the south towards the border. Like I said, you can actually see the border wall from their house. And then on the east side, there is a mesquite grove. There's a porch. There's a pergola. There's a mesquite grove. There's an arroyo. It just goes, it goes on forever out there. There's no residences. There's nothing there at all. It's just the Kelly property. So Wanda Kelly said to her husband, who was making a sandwich at the time, oh, my God, I see some people trespassing on our property. They've got large backpacks, and I see at least a couple of them carrying rifles. And because Alan Kelly has an AK-47 and Wanda knows what that looks like, she said, hey, it's long rifles. She testified that it could have been AK-47s, but she saw at least five people, two of which were armed. Alan comes over to the window. He sees the same thing. And he's doing that. He hears a shot fired, a single shot fired. And he tells his wife, who's pretty deaf, and he says, hey, I heard a shot fired. You need to get down and you need to be very quiet. Alan keeps his rifle right next to the eastern door. So he moves from the living room, grabs his rifle, tells his wife, and he's still in the house, he tells his wife, call the Border Patrol. Now, it's important for people to know that the Border Patrol, all along the southern border, because of all of these incursions, they have a program for ranchers called the Ranch Liaison Program. And this is to provide extra intelligence, safety, and security specific to ranchers on the border. They have the card of the Border Patrol liaison agent, Jeremy Morsell, taped on their refrigerator. She goes to the kitchen, calls Jeremy Morsell, and then is talking with him and hands the phone to Alan, who's still in the house. He's just about to step outside. And Alan reports, "We've got shots fired. We've got armed people here. And I'm going outside." And he says, "You know, I'm going to do what I need to do, basically, to protect my family." And so he goes outside with his AK-47. But when he goes outside, they have a big metal security doors on the house, as you can imagine, living out there. And he slammed the door very loud. And of course, I've been there. I've slammed the door. I know what it sounds like. And it can actually sound like a gun going off, very loud noise. Alan said that after he did that, one of the armed people pointed as he was moving. They're moving parallel. So you have to understand they're east of the residence, but they're moving south. So they're rapidly moving south. And one man, when he heard that noise, Alan is just speculating on that, turned towards him with a rifle, pointing a rifle at him. And Alan said that he took his AK-47, pointed it in a southeasterly direction, and fired way up into the air, at least 100 yards, as he says, over their heads. But when he showed me, he's actually pointing in a southeasterly direction to where this person is. This person is east, right? And so, and then he doesn't see him anymore, and they skedaddle. So Alan goes back in the house. Well, actually, what he did is he walked, because he can't run. There's been a narrative that he chased these people. The guy, you know, he walks like me, okay, very determinately, very slow, and he's not chasing anybody. So there was no evidence of him chasing anybody. But he has a very large barn with equipment and everything about a quarter of a mile away down a road. So he just went to where the road was, and he's looking with his dogs to find out where these people were. Border Patrol gets there first. Two Border Patrol officers get there. Then the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office gets there. They find Alan walking back up the road towards his house with his rifle and with his dogs. He tells them, "Hey, this is what happened." And then they go to the east side and south side of his property, and they're searching. They're searching for people. They're searching for anything that they can find. They just wanted to make sure he was okay and his wife was going to be okay. So we had a total of about 8 law enforcement personnel from Border Patrol and Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office searching. This is 2:30 in the afternoon, bright sunlight, no problems with obstructions on the ground. They search, they stay there for almost an hour, and then they clear the scene and they say, "Hey, if you see anything more, you know, report into us." Now, it's also important for the audience to understand that Alan has got a stellar record as a citizen. He's been 100% cooperative with law enforcement his entire life, had good relationships with Border Patrol, didn't really know Santa Cruz County very much. But every time that there was communication between Border Patrol and Alan, and Alan and Border Patrol, it was always nice. He's been described as being a nice person, very affable, very cooperative and supportive of law enforcement there. So now he comes back in the house. He makes a lunch for himself and he takes a nap. Long about 5:30, and it's starting to get dusk, his MO, so to speak, is to get his livestock. So he goes and gets his horse. He goes out to the paddock. Now, it's important to note that there are two fences. There's an inner perimeter fence that's about, you know, maybe 40 yards from the house, east of the house. All of this is taking place east of the house. And then there's another fence, maybe 50, 60 yards east of the first fence, and that's the horse paddock. So he's going out with his dogs to look for his horse. He sees his horse, which would be north of him, but his dogs take off and they walk up this walking trail and then they stop. And Alan's calling them. Every time I've been out, these dogs are Labradors, they're hunting dogs, they're very curious. They follow me around like puppies every time I'm there. And they stopped and they were sniffing at something in the grass. Alan goes over there and that's when he finds a dead body. And he stays there for a little bit. He doesn't know whether the body's dead or not. He reports that he's there for 2 or 3 minutes, going to check the body to see if it was breathing. Then he notices that this body, there's blood. It looks like this person is a crime of violence. And he takes a flashlight that he has and he attaches it to the tree. So as it's getting darker, he's going to call law enforcement and they can find this body. He takes the dogs, goes back to the house, immediately calls law enforcement. And within 30 minutes, Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department is there. I think there was some Border Patrol there. More sheriffs come. But here is the unique thing, Brian. I've never seen anything like this in my career. Within 40 minutes to being there, all of a sudden, he's in handcuffs and he's under arrest and taken to a patrol car. His wife is, for all intents and purposes, she's definitely detained. She's not free to go, and she's placed in a locked patrol car. They are both subsequently, there's no serious questioning. There's no walkthrough. When we're dealing with shootings and we're investigators, we do something called a walkthrough, or you can even, if it's more intense, we call it a forensic walkthrough. And this is just something where investigators ask the 5 important questions: who, what, where, why, and how. And like, where were you standing? These are important. What did you see? Where were you standing when you saw it? You said you had fired your weapon. Tell us where you fired your weapon. Tell us the directionality, the elevation, some basic things like that, because he's very cooperative. This is what's very important to understand here. You don't have a deceptive witness. You have a person that called police, not once, but twice. You have a cooperative husband. You have a cooperative wife. They're trying to help law enforcement. And all of a sudden, one guy is arrested. The wife, for whatever reasons, is detained and pretty much arrested. And they're transported. Both of them are transported down to the sheriff's office. Here's something else that's really important to know. This guy's a rancher. He's got heavy equipment on his ranch. He's isolated. He's got 180 acres. If this was a bad man who had killed someone, this guy would have taken a backhoe or a bulldozer and buried this guy where nobody would have ever found him and nobody would have been the wiser. Okay, but that's not what happens. They both go down to the sheriff's office, CID. He gives a voluntary Mirandized statement. He tells the lead detective, who's Detective Anza, who keeps accusing him of shooting this person. He tells them, I believe, 13 times that he did not shoot at the person. He did not shoot at anybody. And within 45 minutes, he's arrested for first degree murder, which is lying in wait and with premeditation.
In just 45 minutes to a trespasser.
So less than 2 hours after he reports this to law enforcement, he's arrested for first degree murder by the lead detective, who hasn't been out at the scene, has no context as to what is going on. They had zero evidence. What they have and what they continue to have, in my professional opinion and the opinions of others of our experts, we're all unanimous here, is they had a dead body, and they had a man that called law enforcement and said that there were armed people, there was a shot fired on his property, and he fired up in the air 100 yards over their heads, and that's it. That's all they have. they had, and obviously they had some shell casings that support the fact that Mr. Kelly said he fired his weapon. And so what didn't they have? And that's huge. They didn't have a bullet. They've never recovered a bullet. They've had no DNA. They've had no fingerprints. They've had nothing, literally no forensic evidence to connect Mr. Kelly with the shooting death of Mr. Buttigieg. So in science, there is, and of course, as a forensic criminologist, I obviously a law enforcement expert, but I am a scientist as well. So I use medicine, I use psychophysiology, we use photogrammetry, we use a lot of sophisticated science to help me to render, you know, findings and opinions. In this case, just like we have a ballistic scientist, I mean, we have everything. We're literally the FBI on speed dial. And there was nothing to connect Kelly to the shooting death of Buttigieg. So in science, there is a Latin saying that we use. It's called ergo proc, ergo proctor hoc. And what it means for the civilians out there is just because you have A and B, A doesn't necessarily equate to B, right? A doesn't necessarily equate to B. So A, to be, you know, to use an analogy, just because you have A, which is Mr. Kelly reporting that he fired shots in the air, and you've got B, which is a dead body of a gunshot wound, a gunshot victim on the property, that doesn't necessarily mean that A, which is Mr. Kelly, caused B, which was the death of Gabriel Buttigieg. And there are all sorts of alternatives. And Mr. Kelly provided, and Mr. Kelly and Mrs. Kelly provided a very plausible alternative. And that is that Mr. Buttigieg was killed by a RIP crew. Now, RIP crews are well known and well documented, and CBP has to deal with them. RIP crews are independent bandidos that prey not only on migrants, but prey on cartel drug smugglers and human traffickers that have money and drugs. And so Mr. Kelly said, you know, I heard a single gunshot. And then later we come out and we find a dead body. Mr. Kelly told the investigators that perhaps because there were shots fired, that Mr. Buttigieg perhaps was shot and robbed by a RIP crew member. And then everybody skedaddled south across the border.
Wow. Now, Dr. Martinelli, this is really interesting stuff because I have not heard so many of these facts, and I've been reading, you know, mainstream articles about it. We're going to push our break for another 3 minutes or so you can continue. And if you want, you can stay with us till the top of the hour. We'll have to let you go at the top of the hour at the latest. Tell us what comes next. What's most important to know in the next 3 minutes before break? And keep in mind, you're more than welcome to stay to the top of the hour because there's a lot going on in this case.
Yeah, well, you know, Brian, let's talk, juries 101 and standards of proof and everything like that. Okay, so there's three standards of proof that we use in law enforcement and in the legal profession. Number one is reasonable suspicion. Reasonable suspicion generally defined of specific facts and evidence that would cause a reasonably trained officer to believe that there was some association with a person or persons in criminal activity, either happened before, happening right now, or happening in the future. So there's no issue with the reasonable suspicion. It's all right to detain people. I have no idea why you would detain Mrs. Kelly, because she's just a percipient witness. There's no link whatsoever to criminal activity. So that was strange. Number two, there's probable cause. It sounds like reasonable suspicion, but what it means is that specific articulable facts and circumstances and evidence that causes an officer to believe that somebody committed a crime. So the detectives are saying that they arrested Mr. Kelly for probable cause. And then later, That they took him off the property, but he was under arrest. Then when they got him down to the station, they arrested him because they thought they had probable cause for first degree homicide, which is crazy. But in the jury standard, in order to convict, and I'm sure you and all of your audience know this, is it has to be guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. That means that when the state presents all of its evidence and all of the witnesses testify, that means that the jury, and then we've done our case, right? We're next. The defense puts on our case. The jury, in order to convict Mr. Kelly, can have absolutely no scintilla of doubt that Mr. Kelly killed Gabriel Boudamia. I'll leave it with that for now.
Dr. Ron, where was the body situated vis-a-vis the porch from which Allen fired his weapon into the air? He fired in a southeasterly direction when he was facing east. Where was the body found relative to that position on the compass?
Well, that's a great question, and I'll answer it right now. First of all, the body was found 90 degrees due east, 90 degrees. I think it was like 92 degrees due east. But when I was out there with Mr. Kelly, he's firing another 60 degrees southeast of where the body was found. And
so
then
Tim, south-southeast, yeah.
Yeah, south-southeast, thank you. And I think what is really important to understand is that they used a medical examiner and two ballistic experts, both of which were independent. One was from the state and one was independent in private practice in Seattle. And neither of those persons could make any conclusive evidence that, number one, an AK-47 rifle was used. They both said they couldn't tell whether it was a rifle conclusively, whether it was a rifle or a high-powered pistol. They could make no conclusive findings and opinions that Mr. Boudamia actually died there. So don't forget, and people may not know this, there was a single gunshot wound. It was a mortal wound, but it was not an immediately fatal wound. And so, and there was a lot of blood inside the body. And of course, I looked and our people looked at a lot of the medical evidence. And we came up with a speed, distance, and bleed out chart that we presented to the medical examiner in this case. And she couldn't discount or rebut at all that Mr. Boudamia could have been shot in a totally different area that could have been up to 300 yards away from where the body was found. It could have walked, ran or staggered, and then, having bled out, landed in the location where it was found. Yet the detectives, and we're talking specifically Detective Anza, doubled down after admitting in court today he was not a ballistics expert, did not have a ballistics background. And after admitting this, he still said that the way that the body was found was consistent with the round being fired by George Allen Kelly on his porch directly at Mr. Boudamia. Now, the jury was out there on Thursday. And what I will tell you is that is pretty much an impossible shot, not only because of the trajectory of the bullet, which was low right, traversing to the left and moving upwards. So how is that bullet coming from Mr. Kelly's gun and his position? And we got them all to admit that they really had no idea where the person that fired the bullet that killed Mr. Boudamia was positioned. And that's huge.
And how long post-mortem was the body found?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because they had a heck of a time establishing time of death, which of course is important. And they established that the time of death was finally, after guessing, by the way, and the medical examiner admitted it's basically a guess, 30 minutes before Mr. Kelly had called law enforcement. But here's what's important to note again. There had been 8 law enforcement officers looking all over that area and nobody found a body. And by the way, Mr. Kelly called it in at least 3 hours before the body was found, right? So how does that work out with time of death? It doesn't work it doesn't work out at all for the state with regards to time of death.
It sounds like a lot of things aren't working out for their story. I mean, is the sheriff's office and their detectives, do you think they're being honest brokers here? Is there some conflict of interest or identity politic or virtue signal at play here? I mean, I hate to ask you to speculate, but it just seems strange that you've got all these experts, yourself included. You mentioned the medical examiner, the ballistics experts. I assume the CBP is probably testifying to some things that are not fitting with the narrative of the sheriff department and their detectives. What do you think is happening?
Well, first of all, you know, I'm a forensic expert, so I don't speculate on anything. I'm a fact-based expert, right? I call balls and strikes. No dog in this fight whatsoever. We're all doing this pro bono. And I will tell you, you know, we had several of us involved in this. And if we had believed for 1 minute that Mr. Kelly was culpable in the death of Mr. Budimia, even by accident, we're very honest people, very ethical people. We would have told the defense team, hey, you know what? We don't believe your client. You guys are on your own. But that's not what we found at all. And there's so many things. I mean, we could talk for hours about the mistakes in this case and the confirmation bias. Let me explain confirmation bias for a minute, because we see this, especially in homicide cases where self-defense is asserted. And that is, they do exactly what Detective Anza did. Okay, these are people that have, they're low informed, extremely low in experience. And so they do the whole thing. They see A, which is, you know, the bird in the hand, right? And that's Mr. Kelly. And he calls it in and he says, hey, I fired a gun and I fired it up in the air. And then they see the dead body and they immediately get the confirmation bias. And they say, well, he had to have shot this guy. And when they do this, they discount all of anything that's exculpatory. And that means anything that would be innocent towards Mr. Kelly. And they keep, you know, homing in and doubling down on Mr. Kelly's statement that he shot over their heads. It's very important to know. And we went round and round with Detective Anza last week and today, the problems he had with, let's just say, repeatedly misrepresenting what Mr. Kelly had told them, and which they have documented in a video interview and with a written transcript, where Mr. Kelly on 11 to 13 occasions told him in 45 minutes that he did not shoot Mr. Budimia. He did not shoot at anyone, but yet we have the detective continually saying that Mr. Kelly shot at Mr. Budimia. And in the preliminary hearing, which these jurors didn't get a chance to hear, one of the defense attorneys, Brenna Larkin, got Detective Anza to admit that he believes that shooting at someone, shooting over someone's head, is shooting at someone. And I think everybody here that's fired a gun knows that if you're shooting at a target, basically, if you're a decent shot, that hole's going to go in the target, right? You're not going to be able to not find that bullet because it's way up in the air and God knows where it went. But to this detective, it was the same thing. The next thing, which is huge, is that 2 weeks after this incident, a man who was called, we referred to him as DRR, his name is Daniel, his first name, because he admitted to lying about who he was. His name is Daniel Ruiz Rodriguez, and he ends up being an undocumented alien from a Central American country. I think it's Honduras. Okay, they thought he was a Mexican national, but he was never straight. He shows up 2 weeks later and he says, oh, I saw the whole thing. I was on the property. I was right next to, I was behind Gabriel Budimia when he was shot. The horse got shot. Mr. Kelly's horse got shot. The horse is alive, you know, kicking. The horse was never hit by any bullets. He gives a bad description about the property. He never truly conclusively identifies Mr. Kelly, but he said he was there for the whole thing. He ends
Dr. Ron, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you for laying this out for us. The whole case sounds hinky. Please keep us updated on the outcome. We're praying for Mr. Kelly and his wife. Thank you and your colleagues for all of your great work, not only in this case, but in all the cases in your career. It's honest brokers, forensic experts like you that are calling balls and strikes that give our justice system at least a hope of being fair and impartial. Stay tuned for more State of the Nation after Top of the Hour News with TNT.